Dramatica Users Group Analysis of Brokeback Mountain, November 14th, 2006, led by Chris Huntley. Tonight, we are talking about Brokeback Mountain, and the first thing I would like us to identify, I'm going to start with the main character. I figure that's probably the simplest thing to do. So, who do we think is the main character in Brokeback Mountain?
I don't know his name, but he's the blonde guy. I would say he's the
That's Ennis.
What?
Ennis.
Ennis
Del Mar.
Yeah.
Everybody okay with that, or anybody have any other?
Yeah, you free.
Okay. How about the impact character?
It's his lover.
Jack.
Jack.
All right.
Jack, I swear.
Jack what?
Jack, I swear.
Twist.
Jack Twist.
No, Jack Twist.
Jack
Twist.
Oh, I swear. And it's Del... Del Mar.
Yeah.
Jack Twist. And what is their relationship? What's the main character versus impact character through line about?
Romance.
Yeah, romance, sort of going fishing.
would you call it forbidden?
No, it's just the relationship is love.
Yeah. Lovers.
Right, they're lovers, right. It just happens over 20 years and little fits and starts, yeah. but fortunately we don't see all the in-between time. What is the overall story about in this?
It's the problem of being gay and in a straight world, I would say.
Okay.
Well, actually, that seems to me like their problem.
Well, does that involve the wives? Does that involve the co-workers? Yes, does that involve, because if it does, then that means it's extending beyond their exclusively their relationship. Which I think it does. Mm-hmm. You see, all of the things around it involve all those other characters, and that thematic subject matter is a big part of it. Yeah, so being gay in a straight world. Now, obviously,
in a macho world.
Cowboy world.
Yeah.
Well, all right. These guys, they showed masculinity. I don't go along with that because I feel that these guys they showed masculinity, but they were gay, and that was their problem, I think.
Right. Well, being macho wasn't the problem.
No, no.
I mean, that was sort of a cover for.
They were bronco busters and all that. Sort
one of them was right, but they're both ranchers or cowboys or.
Cowboy. Yeah.
However you want to classify them. Well, that's great. That was fast. Sure, took us a lot less time than we normally do. Let's go right straight to our main character resolve, Change a Steadfast. Is Ennis a change character, or is Ennis a steadfast character, and why? Give examples.
Well, I think we have to call him a change character, and I think the moment that sort of the author's proof of his change is when his daughter's there, and, you know, because throughout he's always making excuses about, you know, no, I can't sort of follow my heart, you know, with you because I got all these other obligations. I've got something else going on all the time. And he finally says, you know what, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to say, you know what, I'll get another cowboy. And I'm going to be at my daughter's wedding. And so sort of like that, sort of making a commitment to a loved one, so to speak, is something he has a real hard time doing. And then he finally decides, I'm going to just do it. Just going to, you know, be at the wedding. And then also, I think that, you know, having the shirts says something. I'm not exactly sure what thematically it means, but it's also an indication that he's showing some kind of commitment, I think, to a relationship that he was always, you know, sort of a commitment to a relationship that he was always real kind of cloudy about before, if that makes any sense.
Playing devil's advocate just for a second. If he was cloudy about it, why did he sort of always put that above everything else in his personal life?
Well, because, but he didn't, he wouldn't go, you know, 100%, right?
Do you think he's ever shown that to anybody, the jacket and the shirt? Do you think he's shown, revealed that secret to anybody?
No.
I mean, it's literally in the closet.
In the closet.
Yes.
I think that was a pretty new thing right there.
Remember, there was also a point where he's got the kids for the weekend, and Jack comes up from Texas because he got the he heard about the divorce, and he won't, you know, drop the kids or find another place to, you know, get rid of them so they can go off and do their thing. So it's not unprecedented. If in fact Ennis is changed, then how do we know that Jack is a steadfast character?
I don't know, that's one way to look at it too, is looking at.
We gotta look at both sides, Jack, but I mean.
But I think Jack stays steady all the way through. You know, he sort of knows what he wants out of a relationship and pushes for that, even to the point where he gets killed.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you guys, and here's why. I think the little coda at the end is actually to show you that he hasn't changed. He's still in the closet. He's still in love. I mean, for the very first time when they break up and he and Ennis goes into an alleyway and throws up because he can't deal with it, all the way to the end, he's got that very strong love, but he cannot share it with anybody else. Jack, who has pretty much, he's like, let's be open about this. Let's go get a ranch together. The way we find out that Jack has changed is from Jack's father. Jack's father says, oh, he kept on saying that you know, Ennis Del Mar and he were going to come up here and whip this place into shape. And for years he was saying that. And then just recently, there's somebody else who said they're going to come up and whip this place into shape. In other words, Jack had basically abandoned Ennis. He said, it's not going to work. I'm going to stop beating my head against the wall. And he went and found someone else. Unfortunately, he probably, you know, in the process exposed himself to someone who shouldn't have been found out, and maybe his father-in-law set him up or something. But the whole idea is that for all these years, and even the last time they meet, he's like, what can I do? I'm at my wit's end. You know, I can't live like this. And then we find out, in fact, he can't, and he has decided to go off with somebody else, and in the meantime gets killed. Well, or has an accident, but the explicit implication is that he's actually, you know, beaten to death.
Yeah, that he was killed,
And to me, that's, you know, what happens usually in a story where the impact character changes, it usually happens off screen. And there's some reveal, you know, that describes to the audience, okay, here's what happened. Here's how you know he changed. In Goldfinger, you know, Moneypenny changes the gas and informs the CIA and changes the gas. And we know that because...
You mean Pussy Galore?
Pussy Galore. Yeah, but in Goldfinger. Yeah, you know, Pussy Galore changes that, and we find that out in a throwaway line. Felix says, well, you know, whatever made her change her mind? And Bond goes, I must have appealed to her maternal instincts. That's it. That's the throwaway we get. I think Ennis, if he had changed, it's the implication is that if he had sort of come out or been able to deal with these feelings that he absolutely will not deal with. He even says, don't ever tell me about it because I'll kill, you know, he implies he'll kill him. He doesn't say it, but it's like, you know, I don't want to hear that or you'll, you know, and you can see that it's going to get some very angry, you know. But Jack is like, you know, I can't live like that. I can't live on little bits and pieces, you know, a couple times a year. That doesn't work for me. So I think that, you know, the problem with this, not the problem, the nature of this story, this film, is that everything is so toned down. Everything is so quiet. You know, it really reflects Ennis's character. He's a very one note, subdued dude. Right. He's very, very much that. And you see, even when he has, you know, the other woman who falls in love with him,
yeah,
he's still clueless. He's still clueless as to how other people want him in his life, in their lives. He just he doesn't get it. Now the fact that we see, okay, yes, and he'll give up another job just like he did all through his entire life to do something that he wants to do, you know, that's really not out of character. But keeping his real love of life in the closet is completely in character. And look where he is. What is his reaction when he sees, you know, he opens it up and he sees the photograph again, the postcard and the shirt and jacket. What's his reaction to that? He cries. You know, which would indicate to us what the story judgment is, that good or bad?
Bad.
Because it's not tears of joy. You know, it is definitely not tears like, oh, my, you know, my daughter's getting married, happy, happy. No, no, no. This is very bitter, unfulfilled, whatever. But it's definitely got baggage.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And what do we think the story outcome is? What does it feel like, a success or a failure?
Failure.
Now we haven't identified even what the goal is, but it sure feels like a failure. It feels like a tragedy. Mm-hmm. At the end, there's nothing happy going on at all for our main character, even in the bigger picture. I mean, even Jack's widow, who had sort of seemed to be okay with how things worked out until Ennis called, suddenly this abstract name had a voice and a real person to it, and that this dream place called Brokeback Mountain wasn't just a dream, it actually was an event and included other people other than her, that was her husband's best memory ever. And so suddenly that became very hurtful to her and very, you know, again, a little bit bitter, but concrete. It wasn't just this whimsical thing that was, you know, Jack was all about, because he certainly had big ideas compared to what he did. So with the story outcome of failure and the judgment of bad, we have a tragedy. Now again, it's toned down, so it's not a Hamlet-style tragedy, but it is a very sad ending. All right, let's continue down here in the story ones. The story limit, time lock or option lock, and why? Option lock, okay, and why?
One thing after another. To get together.
And what, when?
Each time they fell apart.
Right, and eventually what happens? When does it sort of?
They ran out of options when he went. He accepted the fact that he wasn't going to be with him, and he found somebody else.
Even though he was single now, right.
Yeah,
see, basically there are always these other reasons he couldn't do it, and the very end when he was now completely free, realistically, Ennis was still finding reasons not to let them get together. So Jack said, fine. Yeah, that was what the big blow up was about. Now, of course, it's like a really long, extended, rumbling climax, not something that happens very quickly, but that's sort of the nature of the whole film. So an option lock. And
So option lock meaning only no option, right?
Well, you're right. There are a finite number of options. Okay. And once those have all been used up, the story climax occurs. That's what triggers the story climax. And story driver, action or decision?
Action.
Action, right. Because?
The story begins with their... having sex.
Oh, I think it starts about a half hour earlier than that.
They approach the
Well, the action is that the two guys get hired to work together. That's right. Sort of the thing. If that didn't happen,
right.
There's no story.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what would be the closing event? What action would be the closing event? What? Where do we see the the thing that brings about the end of the story is, again, I think this is something that happens sort of over a long, you know, we
getting killed.
Pretty much. I mean, at that point, at that point, you know it's a failure story because it ain't happening. And so all of that stuff that we find out afterward is just a slow reveal of everything that's been set up.
And it's coming to his parents' house.
Right. That's more the main character thread. And a little bit of the relationship, because we see that Jack has kept this, and that the fact that he takes the jacket and the shirt. Remember, it was his shirt and Jack's jacket. And neither one of them had been washed. So, I think that's what he actually liked about it. If this had happened during the Clinton administration, then it would have been...
No, that's a dress.
Yes, okay. But I was saying, she might have been inspired by this, but vice versa. Okay, sorry, that was tacky. That would qualify being cut out. All right, so what about main character approach? Is Ennis a doer or is Ennis a beer and why?
Ennis is a beer.
Yeah, big time.
He's
like, he's so much a beer, right? Well. It's so hard to get him to do anything.
Yeah.
And his wife, I mean, we had a little conversation about this to begin with. You know, Ennis's wife is like, I want you to do something, and Ennis won't. The comment when they're having sex at the end, and she says, you know, don't you want to use protection? And he goes, well, what do you mean? Well, I don't want to, you know, you can't afford to raise any more children. The way he resolves it is he says, okay, fine, you know, pouts and just sort of turns off. That's a completely, not a positive beer's way of dealing with things. That's a very negative way, but it's absolutely a perfect example of a beer.
Excuse me, if I agree that Annie is supposed to be a beer, but he's a beer, but how come the story driven is the action, not the decision?
Because the story driver has to do with what moves the story forward, whereas the main character approach is how the main character would prefer to solve things.
But
so
that's decision, not action. He prefers to keep everything in closet. That's a decision, right?
Right. Well, beers and decisions are pretty much in the same realm as in actions and doers. In fact, you find a doer will be really comfortable in an action story, or a beer will be very comfortable in a decision story. But you see, the context is different. The story driver is about the big story, what moves the story forward, independent of what the main character wants. The main character will have their own personal preference, but that's different. Now, the protagonist is where you see, you know, the overall story. So the protagonist is the one who's going to respond to, well, protagonist, antagonist, all those characters are going to respond to the action. I don't think that... Well, who would you think would be closest thing to a protagonist in this film?
Jack, I would think.
Absolutely, Jack, because certainly isn't Ennis. Mm-hmm. He is not moving things forward at all. I don't think we have archetypes in here.
Another thing on the him being a beer is that Dennis is very uncomfortable in the situation.
Right, and so you've got a beer in an action story, so he's very uncomfortable, a fish out of water.
Yeah.
So that's another indication that's the right combination, that not only is he a beer and that it's an action, but the two together gives a feeling of the main character being very uncomfortable in resolving the bigger picture story. All right, how about the main character problem-solving style, linear or holistic?
Linear.
Because?
Well, you even said, when she said, if you can support the kid, do what you want.
Well, that's what she says.
No, she says, and so instead of saying, let's discuss this, why, blah, 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 he goes, okay, we just won't have sex.
Okay, what's another example?
I'm thinking.
I get back to he's always like, using his job as an excuse, and it's an easy linear way of sort of addressing. He's uncomfortable with doing this, so he can't deal with the the sort of holistic picture.
There's an excellent example in his main character through line. Remember when he's talking about what his father showed him? If you are gay, this is what's going to happen to you. That is about as linear as you can get. And so, you know, if we ever, you know, get, if we're ever express this in the wrong place at the wrong time, it could be our death. And in fact, it turns out it's very true. But, you know, that's a very linear way of looking at it. So we see him as a linear thinker. And with the main character growth, stop or start, I'm going to suggest that we don't necessarily answer this yet, but you have a feel for what it might be. Now, as a steadfast character, he is waiting for something external either to stop or to begin, to stop or start. So it's not something that's internal, it's not inside. He's actually looking more on the outside in terms of trying to outlast something. The biggest clue is feeling is like the fugitive, you know, he's got these troubles and he's sort of, you know, being beaten on by them and is trying to wait, try to outlast that, versus a start character who is like Ray Kinsella in Field of Dreams, who builds the baseball diamond in the cornfields and waiting for that something for him to come. So
he acts like someone who wants things to stop. He's kind of what's hard about that is, again, trying to think of it was, because if he was a change character, I would say, well, it feels more like a chip on the shoulder kind of thing. But as steadfast character, it seems like the way he's acting is he's waiting sort of for Jack to stop putting options. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But on the other hand, you could also interpret it as kind of a hole in the heart thing where.
But do we see that? Yeah, do we see the hole? I don't think we see the hole.
It's almost like it's implicit.
You see a lot in Jack. Jack's definitely a character saying, I've got this need. I can't survive with it. I mean, that's a perfect example of a start character. You know, I'm lacking something in my life. I need it. And he's saying, look, you know, this is enough. It's been great for us for 20 years. Let's just stop your whining. I've got these things, you know, I've got these bills I have to pay. I wish they'd sort of stop, but I've got to hold out against all these different forces that are, you know, pressuring me. You know, even when at the end, you know, he has nothing going on in his life, he still feels like these things are coming at him. The girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend. Yeah, it's just like all these external pressures. And there, of course, it's an imagined thing because it's growing, it's sort of symptomatic of what's really driving him. But so I think it feels more like a stop story. I kind of like to not choose that just so that it frees us up in our choices of domains. Any questions about these choices that we've made? Nope? Okay, well, let's move on into...
One of the things that seems to me where the stop, everything is very emotionally charged in this film.
Yes.
Boy, does it have impact.
Oh, it's...
You know, I found it... this is my second time I'm seeing it. Second time around, it's still pretty hard to see, I think.
Yeah, it's very difficult because it's you've got this person who is emotionally stunted.
Yeah.
Who finds these emotions coming out of him that he can't control.
Yes.
That
yes.
he just, and he doesn't know how to deal with it.
Yes.
Okay, so let's look over at the domain chart here. And we have our four domains, situation, activity, fixed attitude, and manipulation. One of the things we've done is we've already identified Jack as a beer, which means he's going to be in either one of the internal domains.
Ennis.
Pardon? Ennis, thank you. Yeah, not Jack. Thank you for correcting me. Ennis is going to either be a fixed attitude character or a manipulation character. And for this, for tonight, and it varies on different stories, I really recommend looking at what's inside the domains as well as the domain itself, but look what's inside, because I think in each case it'll be easier to see examples of what describes that character. So any suggestions for where Ennis would be, either fixed attitude or manipulation? Oh, come on, guys. You have a 50-50 chance.
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say that I also feel like I feel like the overall story is going to be in either manipulation or fixed attitude. And I saw this twice as well, and I still cannot settle on which goes where. Go ahead.
Okay.
I think it's fixed attitude.
Okay, because?
For Ennis?
Yes.
Okay. I think it's fixed attitude for everything, but I mean,
well, I mean, now, the one thing about it is this story is really heavily weighted toward Ennis.
Uh-huh.
We see a lot more of Ennis's through line and see things from his perspective more than anybody else in the story. So in that regard, you're going to see everything tainted by whichever through line he's in.
I think it's playing a role, because he's always playing a role in the Jack,
but that would be in a, that wouldn't be his, that would not be his context, that would be either in the relationship or in the bigger picture.
Oh,
so if it's that, what we're looking for is what the main character himself is dealing with. So if he's fixed attitude. Now if you look, we've got memories, impulsive responses, mm-hmm. contemplations, and innermost desires. I mean, these are the things that give him the biggest problem. These are the things he can't deal with.
Yeah.
And that's when you're trying to identify the through line. You're trying to say, where's the source of this character's conflict? Where's it growing from? And those seem to be perfect. You know, the impulsive responses, you know, he goes out and picks fights, and mm-hmm. and even when he's with Jack, the kind of, you know, the way he initially responds to things is very sort of conflict laden. You know, it's very sort of grows out of this really strong feeling. So that would make Jack a situation character. And how do we see Jack a situation character? Why do we see him? What is Jack's situation, or what about Jack's situation is why he has an impact on Ennis?
He's gay.
He's gay, that's true.
And he had this tremendous affection for Ennis.
Okay, be careful. That's sort of getting into the relationship. Oh, so that's just
See, that's another problem I have. Yeah. Is you can make a very strong argument that their relationship is in situation. You can also make a very strong argument.
No, it's definitely not in situation, because they're doing different things and they're going different places and it happens at different times. It definitely is more of a process, and you see it. It develops as a process over time.
No, but the relationship is in a situation. The situation is 1963, and these things are just not accepted.
That's the first act. This thing takes place over 20 years.
Believe me, wasn't accepted in 77 either.
No, I agree. I agree, but I don't think. Remember, the overall story is being gay in a straight environment. So that's, you're describing a different through line. However, if we're saying Ennis is a fixed attitude character whose problem is that he's got this attitude that's problematic, or this bias or preconception or prejudice or whatnot, how do you think we could describe Jack in terms of Jack's situation? What makes him problematic for Ennis?
Ennis or Jack?
We're talking about Jack.
Jack. For Jack would be situation.
Okay.
Is that he's openly gay?
No.
He's really not open.
He's attractive.
He's attractive.
He's single. He's also
rich. Jack's not single.
Well, he's available. No one's single. Sorry. No, that's what you're right. He's not single. But he's attractive, and he doesn't have to worry about time or money. That's what I meant by available. He can come up to Ennis anytime because he's got basically the means.
Right.
So that's one of the things, that's why when we see him in the film, when he's able to pop up pretty much whenever Ennis wants
right,
it.
Yeah.
And that availability is a real problem, forces, you know, Ennis to have to deal with his crap. Because, you know, there's a 4-year lapse between the first time and the second time, And Ennis sees that card, postcard. He's like back to the post, you know, the mailbox right away, sending off a "you betcha." So it's not like it's gone. It's just sort of been put on hiatus for that period of time. And the fact that Jack has that availability, he's got the means that he can be there, and he's, you know, he's attractive, and he's, and Ennis is attracted to him, his physical, you know, body. You know, that's not changing, even though, you know, over the period of time, it doesn't change that much. So those would be things that, you know, that would force Ennis to have to reconsider and deal with his demons. Those are the things that stir up the trouble. Because you get the impression that during that time when Jack's not around, Ennis is just surviving. He's just living. You know, he's on autopilot. But then when Jack pops in, you see, I mean, he walks out the door and like they're all over each other and just like starving people. And who's the one who leads the kiss? Ennis. Jack picks up on it, but Ennis is the one who actually goes for it. And so, I mean, the fact that, you know, that you've got this sort of, here's this available person who's a very attractive and obviously willing, just completely forces Ennis to have to deal with that baggage. Even at the end, even when he's, you know, everything's fine until he opens up the cupboard and there's Jack. And what's the last thing that he says to the, it's the hardest thing.
I can't, because he doesn't move his lips.
What,
it says, yeah, he says, Jack.
Jack, I swear.
I swear, right.
Okay, that's it, because I swear to God, I've never been able to understand it.
You know, so even again, that physical presence, that, you know, it has the same effect on him. And another reason why I think he's a steadfast character, that response that he has at the beginning is all the way through. So, if that's the case, then where do we see the overall story? It can either be manipulation or activity.
Activity, like fishing.
Well, the fishing, the fishing is the relationship.
No, he means fishing.
Yes, we're going fishing, yes. Camping, frolicking, whatever you want to call it. Getting some. I mean, I think you see their relationship in the activity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what all their relationship's about, you know.
Their
activity.
They're obtaining.
Yes, exactly.
They're trying to understand each other.
Whereas if you see here in manipulation, we've got playing a role, changing one's nature, conceiving an idea, developing a plan. I mean,
Jack's developing a plan. Both of them are playing a role.
Think of the wife. I think of Ennis's wife. Which one of those four, there's a scene that kind of like describes one of those things.
Playing a role.
Well, the conceiving an idea, you know, when she sees them kissing, it's kind of like, wait, there's this new idea that I'm sort of kind of getting a flash on, and I don't really want to deal with this. But it's like that's a conceiving an idea scene, you know. Uh-huh. There's this new idea that's popped into the story.
Understanding, though, because she could be understanding to that.
Because we don't see that. We don't see her discussing with her girlfriends. We don't see any kind of understanding. In fact, what we see is there's this very scary idea. She shuts the door on it, and she doesn't want to deal with it. I mean, she's even... It's not until she basically tests him by putting a note on in the fishing box, that's, you know, the fishing kit, that says, "Bring me back a fish," and she comes back. It was hooked on a hook, and it's completely untouched, that she basically says, okay, you know, I get it. I understand. You know, I got the idea. It's now fully developed. I can move on. And I, you know, let's get divorced. But that's, you know, you see lots of role playing on all of the characters' parts. You see, you know, the argument being made to change one's nature, you know, that being a pretty strong one, and, you know, developing a plan. Think of those scenes where you see each of the families apart, you know, developing the family, you know,
yeah,
and here's...
They're trying to sort... The other characters are sort of trying to build a life, in a sense, which is part of the overall story, is how do you proceed, you know, anyway.
Right, how do you make this work?
How do you make this work, yeah.
And you even see that, remember, he's at the dinner party and he's talking to the other guy and they're talking sort of about the same kind of things in coded language. Or when Jack's having dinner with, you know, people from the company. And also when Jack's at the bar talking to the other rodeo guys, and there's the, you know, conceiving idea about people sort of getting an idea about who he is, and also his future, soon-to-be wife saying, you know, when are you going to get the idea that I want to see you? You know, I want you to come over and talk to me. So you've got lots and lots of, I think all of those are really well developed in that overall story. You can look to the other characters, the non-main character, the non-impact character, and see all of those examples. So I think that's a really good way to try to identify your overall story, is to look to the characters that aren't the main character or the impact character, because then you know it's involving everybody else. All right, so now, what do we do with the concerns? We need to move down a level and find out where the foci of each of the four through lines are. So, you know, it's either going to be, you know, in the yellows here, memory, understanding, past, developing a plan, the reds, the purples, or the greens. Anybody have an idea? Look to Ennis. I think Ennis is, because we see so much of him in the story, I think he's probably the strongest one to look at. But you can also see Jack. Where's Jack thinking about all the time?
The future?
Absolutely. He doesn't talk about anything except for the future. Even his father says, yeah, he's got all these big plans, and his wife, and his, of course, what his father, Jack's father-in-law, this guy's got no future. You know, so it's like he's defined by this dream of the future, of what his future plans are. We're going to build a life together and get the ranch and we'll do all this stuff together. That's Jack, which puts Ennis here at innermost desires, which of course is the area he has the biggest trouble with.
Like closure and denial.
Closure, denial, hope, dream. You just see those things just struggling within him. And that means their relationship is all about obtaining. But if you look, I don't think obtaining is very descriptive of it, but if you look what's inside, approach, attitude, self-interest, and morality,
yeah,
those four speak well about what's going on between them and where their conflict is. Because you see that a lot of the, you know, this is, you're thinking about too much about yourself, you got to think about us, you know, the self-interest versus morality. And then we see over here.
Well, I mean, if you were to illustrate, you know, you're filling in the all the blanks in the software, and you come to, you know, subjective story concern of obtaining.
Mm-hmm.
How would you illustrate that? What?
Well, I think getting some is probably a pretty easy way of just talking about that.
Okay.
Because what is their, when we see them, they're basically on their trysts. You know, they're getting time together, getting time to have sex.
That sounds more like doing, but you're talking about that, the effort to find time, to obtain the time and the opportunity.
Right, and you see the conflict. The conflict comes between them when they can't get it, and they both, one of them wants it and the other one doesn't want it. It's not... We in fact, the doing part, that's kind of like the la 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 la. Okay, then they cut past that to, okay, now we're back to when are we, you know, we're no longer obtaining. We're losing things. I'm going to lose you again for 6 months.
Right.
So remember, part of the of all of these.
Well, yeah, and then also there's an awful lot of I mean, you know, Jack's talk about the future, but it's talk about, you know, setting up house and ranch.
It's right? Everything. He's and, constantly and, just talking
and accomplish
about.
some accomplish a life basically together, right?
Right.
Is their discussion.
And even when he's talking to people who aren't even part of, you know, are not, is not Ennis. He's talking about that with everybody. That's just sort of Jack's spiel, his shtick. You know, that's what he's dealing with. Which also then puts us down in changing one's nature, which is what everyone's concerned about, especially if you think about the peripheral characters, the father-in-law, Jack's father-in-law, the wives, about trying to change the nature of their husbands, the people around them who are trying to point out the nature of, you know, it's like, why don't you drop that guy and marry me? You know, the guy at the
part,
the one who, the second husband, the one who works at the
with the loudmouth wife.
Well, that no, I'm talking about Ennis's wife's second husband.
Oh, right.
Right, the manager of the food mart or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Piggly Wiggly.
Okay.
You know, and you see, look at what we have in changing one's nature. We have rationalization, commitment, obligation, responsibility. You see all their jobs, their lives, their wives, their kids are all seen in those terms by particularly the Man in Impact character, but also people, you know, sort of putting those labels on their relationships with other people. And even the, you know, that Thanksgiving scene where you've got the, you know, who's responsibility for the child, you know, what he can watch TV and what he can't, and the interfering father-in-law and the passive mother-in-law, and you know, so you've got a lot of that going on in all aspects of the story. Does that sound?
Yeah,
very good.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about now we get down to the little ones? I'll just read it, so you don't need to. Now, this is fortunately, since we're in this group, this is the group that you're probably most familiar with because it's the ones we build the archetypes out of. So in Ennis's, we've got consideration, or consider, pursue, avoid, reconsider, logic, feeling, control, uncontrolled, conscience, temptation, help, hinder, faith, disbelief, support, and oppose. So one of those four groups is going to have the main character problem, and also what the main character thinks is the problem, which, since he's a steadfast character, that's where his attention is going to be. Anybody have a...
I'd say denial.
Denial, which is conscience, temptation, help, and hinder. Okay, what do you see as being the problem, or what do you see as being the symptom, or?
Well, the problem is that he refuses to admit to anyone besides himself, you know, what he truly wants in life.
I think he feels like his conscience is telling him what he wants is wrong, but he's constantly tempted to go and do it.
Okay, how does that work with the scene where he separates, the very first time he separates from Jack, and he goes into the alley, and he throws up?
That's his conscience.
You think his conscience is making him throw up?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I think so.
Not I know in the book.
No. He's been taught something. He's
but
been taught that that's bad.
In the novel, it says he was thrown up because the bad feeling, the pain of feel that Jack and him going to be separate.
Right, and I think that's you see his embarrassment by being seen. Why is he embarrassed? What is he showing that gets him almost into a fight in that alley? Gets into a fight with where the skyrockets are, gets him to a fight outside the bar with the guy in the truck. What's driving that? Because those aren't all about Jack. Only one of those involves Jack. But they're all instances, I think, that really, really reveal what's driving him. How about this? I have an answer, that's why I am leading.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
This is for fact, but is it his manhood or his, you know, that people...
No, what is the thing, you just be obvious, what is it that he seems to be having the biggest trouble with?
He's bisexual.
His feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
No. Of any kind.
That's too obvious. You mean...
Yeah, he has a real problem with feelings.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember, he lives this life that is completely cold, but and when he actually feels something, he has no idea how to process it.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of
it. He's like, he doesn't know where it's coming from. He doesn't know what it is. It's making him sick. So he's got this he's got this problem of feeling, but that's not where he's focused, though. He feels he's over here and uncontrolled. He basically thinks, if I lose control, I cannot lose control. I have to. And so my response is, when I do lose control, I've got to take control. I've got to be completely, you know, level-headed about it. But when I get into trouble because I lose control, I drink too much and I beat somebody up or I get beaten, but it's my lack of control that's the problem. And if I keep myself controlled, you know, he's so tight.
What you're saying, that control for him is not feeling, or not feeling.
Well, see, the way it works is that when a character has a serious problem, they can't see it. But what they see is, they see the symptom of it. And so the symptom of not being able to deal with feelings is to really find instances where things are free or uncontrolled to be completely problematic and then try to clamp down on it and get it under control. You know, so that way he would, see, theoretically, if he just looked at certain things logically, then he can understand, well, you know, I love this guy, blah, 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 or, yeah, because I said, so the question is that the feeling does seem to be the thing that causing him grief, though. That's the thing that he just can't seem to process. Let's say, because he could use logic, and if he did, then everything would be okay, because basically logic would dictate that, you know, he could work it out, but he can't.
Lost, and they can't deal with that too. In other words, when Jack goes away, or when they're parting, or maybe he doesn't feel.
No, it's the fact that he has feelings. Okay. It's just that he doesn't know what these things are.
Okay.
And it's this monster that he just he can't. It's kind of like, you know, the nature of having a problem that you can't see. It's kind of like being on one of the beaches near where the tsunami hit, and you see this enormous wave come, and you have to deal with that, and you're going, God damn, what? Well, the problem isn't the tsunami. That's the symptom.
Yeah, that's the reality.
So that's what you're dealing with, but what you gotta, in order to prevent it, you gotta deal with, you know, those earthquake things. And that's why it's what's really interesting, and this is completely beside the point, but it's kind of fascinating with regard to that tsunami, is that in Bali, all of the locals, none of them would live near the coast. They were all inland. So when the Westerners came, there were all these wonderful beaches that were completely unoccupied. And so they built all these wonderful hotels right up on the water. Well, now, if you think that, okay, they in their past had this, you know, these effects coming on, it's like, I don't care why, you know, they might assign it to some god, or actually they did. They basically, the gods don't want you to live near the water, even though they're fishermen. So they have to trek all the way from their house down to the boats and then and back. But you know, along come a tsunami, suddenly they're right. So it's the same. That's how those kinds of problems can grow up, where you have a real reason, but then you lose sight of it, but you still have that symptom that you're dealing with. So I guess the question then would be, you know, which one seems to be the real problem for him? Is it feeling, or is it uncontrolled?
Uncontrolled.
And why do you think that would be the thing that's causing him trouble?
I think that he wants to love with Jack, but he can't find how to put it in his life.
Well, why don't he's
completely frustrated.
Let's do this. Let's take a 5-minute break. I'm going to turn on the computer so we can see what the ramifications of choosing one thing, and then we can see what it looks like for choosing another. So that way, we can try it different ways and see what it makes, where the other through lines, where they pop up, because we might say, you know, this one works, that one doesn't, based on other choices. So let me give you 5 minutes while I turn everything on.
How about the fact that when they meet and his wife is overlooking it, and he doesn't care, he goes right to her and right to this Jack, and even though his wife, he must know that his wife is overlooking it from the window.
I'm sorry. What about that?
It's uncontrolled, you know, because if he was controlled, he would wait until they were out of sight, you know.
Right, and what his response would be, I've got to get myself back under control. And so, and he does, when he goes inside, he's back, got himself under control,
yeah,
and things sort of move normally.
But
so
he doesn't do that. He rushes up to the Jack and...
Yeah, but he doesn't know that he's being seen.
Oh,
you know, it's.
But I think that he must know his wife.
No, he doesn't.
No, he's pretty clear. He wasn't even thinking of her.
He wasn't thinking of her.
No.
But see, he has a point. Even there, he wasn't controlling himself.
Right, and if you asked him, and I mean, listen to what he says. It's like, if this get, you know, we get out of hand with this, this is gonna be a problem for us. Mm-hmm. He's completely looking at it as a control issue. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like we've got to keep ourselves under control. As long as we keep ourselves under control, we can deal with it.
Well, isn't it the banner of control? Isn't it your safety or your image or your ego with the public? I mean that it's very
well. Sure, that's but you see that's the way he deals with it.
Yeah.
And in fact, that's what he believes is the, you know, the way to address things. That things that are too free,
yeah,
are problematic.
Yeah.
And we'll see is that go away. Is that that will be reflected in some of the other through lines. You'll see that, and let's find out where those show up, because that might work or it might not work. Let me bring up the story engine and make the choices we've made.
So when you pick your story, say like in this one with activity, and even though we're focusing on obtaining, does that mean that we don't have to really develop the doing and the understanding, or those are still end up being part of the story?
They'll be in when you're dealing with developing the plot. There'll be one act will be devoted to each of those.
Okay.
So during the development of the plot, each of the four types will be explored.
But the thematic issues that run through will tend to be the core of the...
Well, what you'll find is that there'll be a concern that's going to be consistent, and then there will be a temporal exploration of everything else. So it'll always be within the context of, okay, I've got this concern that's always a problem, but let me look and explore everywhere else to see, is this in fact where it is? Because knowing the concern is something that you may not, that audience might not be completely aware of until the end of the story.
So
but you as an author, since you're essentially the story god, you know what's really causing the trouble.
So once we pick this, could we go and look at maybe one or through lines and say, you know, act one, act two was focusing on this?
Oh, in fact, we will. That's what are called the signposts. And that's part of the process is to check those as well. So let's go into the theme browser.
Do you want me to do the lights?
Sure. Yes, I think you guys will be able to see it a lot better.
Need a clap.
Clap on, clap off. So what we've got here are, let's go down to the main character element level. So if we chose feeling as the problem, because that seems, the reason I suggest that is that, I mean, it seems really obvious, but it's also the thing, when he gets most incapacitated, it's when feelings take him over. Uh-huh. And he absolutely loses control. So the control really is a symptom of the feelings, not the other way around. It's not like somebody who, for instance, if someone might be, when they find that things are out of control, then they get all upset. I think this is the other way around. He actually gets all upset. When he gets upset, he's out of control. So there's a causal relation. That's the difference between the problem and the symptom. It's like where the rock drops in the water, and then the effect of the waves that it creates. That's the symptom.
Well, what we have to address, though, is we pick that, and then hope becomes his right issue, his thematic range or whatever. And so it becomes a question, how do we illustrate that when
think of hopeless. Think of it in terms of problems. So think of it in terms of him feeling hopeless, that this can't go anywhere. We are doomed. We cannot go anywhere with this. Okay. So if we look over in the overall story, we have a problem of temptation and a solution of conscience. And if you think about the whole, what do you think the idea of them spending time together up at Brokeback Mountain while they're watching the sheep, when they're actually, you know, giving in to temptation, that's when the sheep get killed, that's when they get mixed up in the other herd, that's when they get caught by the supervisor who sees them romping around, you know, shirtless. The symptom being uncontrolled, again, you see that with the, you know, again, with the problem is you've got to keep these sheep the solution is you've got to keep the sheep under control, and you do that by supervising them at all times. And if you, it's not a problem unless things get out of control. As long as they're controlled, no problem. And you see that with the father-in-law, with Jack's father-in-law. He's a total control freak. That's how he thinks he's going to make sure that his family is all in line, is he will be the control meister. Mm-hmm. You know, when he sees something that he looks like he's losing control, he goes in and he reasserts it, which of course isn't really truly dealing with the problem. But
it is symbolic.
Right. Basically, when Jack thinks that he feels like he's losing control, then he says, "Okay, look, this is my house. This is how it's gonna do, and I'm gonna do it." And he takes the knife and starts cutting. So he basically asserts control on his home, and all the, I don't want to say all the tension disappears, but at least immediately it calms down.
Yeah.
But that's all the symptom and the response. So that's all the effects of the problem, but not the problem itself. And issues of responsibility, you see that a lot with both, think of the wives and their feelings toward their husbands and the issue of responsibility. They both feel that they're not very responsible. You know, that it's sort of irresponsible would be a pretty good description of the kind of conduct that these people have about the characters, particularly, you know, Jack and Ennis as fathers. Which again, that's not their role in the main. That's not the main character impact character role. That's their role in society. As gay men, they're not being very good straight men. You know, and that's a problem.
Tell them.
Now, if we look down at Jack as an impact character, we see his problem being temptation, him wanting to take the easy way out, and he's a change character, and eventually he changed the conscience. It's like, okay, I'll do what I know I can't do what I want to do, so I know I'll do what I think is best. I know what will, so, and that is, let Ennis alone and, you know, head off on my own. Find somebody else to set up house with. Unfortunately, it is a tragedy, so it doesn't lead to a good result, but.
Isn't it surprising that this whole movie comes from a very short story by Anne Froelich?
Have you read the short story? It's like a poem. It is the most beautifully written short story I've read in years.
But it's only around 75 pages.
Not even.
Oh, no.
Not even that. I think it's around 30 pages.
In other words, this is a tremendous, they'll fill out.
You'd be surprised if you read the short story that, in essence, it's exactly the same. The movie is exactly the same. They put in a little extra stuff about the in-laws and all that stuff. None of Jack's wife, or very little of it, is even in the short story. It's mostly has most of the Ennis's wife stuff in there. But
in the short story, did they intimate, think of how much it seems to me the landscape, the writing, in other words, the photography.
They did a bang-up job. They did. And the thing is that, as I said, the short story is written like a poem, so that in very few words they convey what takes them a scene to do. Like the scene where, you know, the sex scene. Yeah. That's a very short paragraph, but I'll tell you, it describes everything that went on in that scene.
Oh, okay.
But it's so compact and so beautifully done, and it's amazing. It's got all the emotional impact in it. And that's the thing that's...
You're saying the short story is like a poem.
Yeah, it absolutely is, where it is so succinct. There's not it's not lots of flowery description and such. So it hits, you literally reading the short story is like watching this 2.5 hour or 2 hour and 15 minute movie.
Okay.
It's got that richness. Now, it has all the same emotional impact. The movie has a little bit more logistical stuff going on. You know, all the sort of the peripheral stuff is a lot more explained, particularly rounding out Jack's part of the story. That's not as explored nearly as much. It's really about Ennis.
But you know, if it's a poem, this tremendous emphasis on the landscape makes sense because really in a kind of a way, they get us into nature and God and hills. And you know, the picture of I think it's Jack, where he has a sheep on the stirrup of his horse. That's a very emotional.
Well, I mean, there is a lot of imagery in the film that is not specifically in the short story that is very beautiful and powerful.
But it'd be associated with something that comes through as a poem. In other words, varied and big impact emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, if you think of a tone poem, where a poem that evokes feelings and images. That's kind of what this is about, the short story is about, but it's a lot more specific than a tone poem would be. It is prose. It is not poetry, but to me, it really read like it because it was just so rich. Literally, you pull out a sentence and it would have a completely different feel to it. It's just, I highly recommend reading it. It is really beautiful.
And it's
just Borders. As effective. It's just as emotionally effective.
You can buy it at Borders. It's actually in book form.
Yeah, they have it in book form, which I think they put it in very large print so they could have it take up more than 30 pages. But it's also in a book, a collection of short stories called Cold Creek, I think it's called. Anne Proulx, right? I think that's how I pronounce her name. If you look on the internet, there are actually some copies of it there too.
Okay, then it's my turn to say the good news.
What's that?
I have a good copy in the internet.
I mean, I first read it, I looked for it on the internet, I got it, I downloaded it, I printed it, I loved it, so I bought the book. Because I just, you know, I felt that it was appropriate for me to pay for it. But I first read it on the internet and I printed it out, and it was really amazing. I mean, it really is. And it's very short. Yeah.
Now,
You can find it on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Just Google it, you know. You
can... Yeah, if you want, I can get for you. You mean for you?
Oh, okay. I can give you.
But if you like it, I suggest paying for it. You know, we're all writers. We all, you know, you can. And I mean, even if you go on to, you know, Amazon or onto, I think I got a copy of the book that it's in on Amazon used. So I think it cost me about $4, but it was still, I, you know.
Then I won't give it.
But it's really worthwhile. So let's look at some of the, let's
but
look
it's
at the.
Also at the library.
Yes, I'm sure. Again, I would be in that the collection.
No.
Oh, is it?
I thought it was going to be in a collection. I tried to find a collection. It wasn't. But it just, and I got it. I haven't read it yet. It's a poem on the disc. It's a very thin booklet.
Oh, okay. Well, there's also, remember, it was originally a short story in a New Yorker. Uh-huh.
I think it was a New Yorker.
So, yeah, it's...
It's in the public library.
Yeah, there are a lot of public ways to get it. I do highly recommend reading it, though. I read all of the other ones in her book, and her writing is very, very concise and very rich. I think that Brokeback Mountain is actually the best one of the in that collection. Although several of them I think were, you know, award-winning short stories, but they're mostly little character studies or little, you know, event things. They're not full stories, and this was the closest one that came to feeling like a complete story, which is why I don't think it was too terribly difficult for them to, you know, to turn into something. All right, here let's look at the overall the relationship through line, the main character versus impact character through line, and we have the problem in their relationship, again, temptation. You know, giving in to something that we selected as the urge to embrace immediate benefits despite possible consequences. Very appropriate.
Yeah.
Disbelief as the symptom and faith as the response. I think if you look at the conversations between Jack and Ennis, particularly as it gets later in when they're getting more, there's more conflict between them. You know, I think you see a lot more of the "I don't believe you" kind of stuff on Jack not believing Ennis's excuses as causing really, you know, like he's giving these excuses about, "Oh, I can't go because I've got the girls" or whatnot, and you know that that creates conflict between the two of them in their relationship. But he puts on the front, it's like, "Oh, okay. Fine, I'll believe you, yeah, whatever." So it's interesting. I think we see a bit of that. Let's look at the story engine settings. And I think we're set up to print, aren't we here?
Should be.
Okay, let me print this. How do you set up on the Windows side so that you can reduce it?
Reduce
I don't need to. Okay. Yeah, on the Mac it.
Yeah, I don't
prints
think
it a little large.
Windows side.
No, I guess you can't.
I mean, you get properties and all that, but.
All right. So we'll print those up, and we'll discuss. In the meantime, we can just look at them. Let's look at the main character, all of the stuff that we haven't chosen. So we already talked about, you know, fixed attitude, how Ennis's, you know, problem is he's basically stubborn in a very negative way. He has his most conflict grows from his innermost desires and his inability to deal with them, to process them, to express them even. Thematically, he's in hope versus dream, you know, the hopelessness of, or what he would like versus the, you know, the how it's completely, he feels it's completely outside of his, it's a dream, it's not something that's even remotely accessible. The unique ability of hope, let's see, Now this is a one of the things is this is a failure story. So his unique ability is not going to be very strong because it doesn't because that's the unique ability is a quality that makes the main character able to help the story end in success. Well, it ends in failure. So hope is not going to be very strong. In fact, it'll be undermined by rationalizations, and you see him making excuses and rationalizations all over the place, which those turn out to be a lot more, a lot stronger than his ability to hope. The benchmark of impulsive responses, I think, you know, he starts off and he's very we'll see. How would you say? Do you think he starts off as being very quick on the draw with his impulsive responses, or does he sort of do they get more and more so as time goes on? Which way do you see it going, increasing or decreasing? These are just sort of like for him personally.
His personality probably decreasing.
That's yeah.
More withdrawn and into himself.
Right, because you see when they first like. Get into it, he's like, you know, really reactive, and it gets less and less so, to the point where he, you know, he starts picks a fight and he just sort of lays there and gets the crap beaten out of him. Mm-hmm. So his impulsive responses are diminish over time. That's what we see as the benchmark. All right, let's look at Jack. We see Jack is here in situation. So his issue, the thing that thematically he's concerned about are delay versus choice. And you certainly see delay as a big one for him. It's like every time that comes up, that's a real big hot topic for him. And we see his unique ability is delay. And I think that's the impact character's unique ability is the quality that allows the impact character to impact the main character, to undermine the main character's effectiveness. So in other words, his harping on delay really undermines Ennis's efforts. Jack constantly like we keep putting this off, like we don't get to see as much. You know, now you're putting it off until November instead of August. You know, all these things are the things that really you see Ennis shutting down because of it. And in order for, you remember we said our overall story is about gays and, you know, being gay in a straight world, the more Ennis shuts down, the less likely that that's going to end successfully, where there's going to be success, gays are going to be successfully working that world of the story. And in fact, that's what happens. He sort of totally shuts down, which forces Jack to find someone else, and it probably then exposes himself to the wrong person, you know, for what he is, and gets killed because of it.
So if that's his unique ability, then the impact character critical flaw
would be the thing that approach, the impact character critical flaw of approach would undermine his ability to delay things, and that's because he's an eager beaver. You know, he's like, okay, you know, I'll be there, I'm right there, and as opposed to holding back. If perhaps he had held back, that might have forced Ennis to come forward and participate a little more. Instead, he's just like, it's like, right there. You say the word, I'm right there, and I'm always available. And I think that undermines his effectiveness. But not enough. I think that the delay issue really does have the biggest effect on Ennis, and is ultimately Ennis's undoing in terms of being able to grow and change. So let's look at the overall story. We chose manipulation. That was one of the things that we had selected, and. You see a lot of characters manipulating one another. We weren't even talking about it in terms of manipulation, but you see how Ennis manipulates his wife, how Jack is manipulated by his father-in-law,
And by his
wife. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, he goes along with it, but she's just her father's daughter. They're trying to set up household in a particular way and live a particular, you know, way of being. Mm-hmm.
And Jack is trying to manipulate Ennis. You know, it's trying to, you know, let's set up house. So I mean, it's all over. You see all these characters sort of trying to control and manipulate these people around them. The issue is responsibility versus commitment. I say we talked a little bit about responsibility, but the flip side of that is, you know, how committed are you to it? And I mean, the focus on the marriages and the marriage commitment, I think, is a pretty, and breaking that commitment right and left is pretty strong.
The story goal of changing one's nature, I mean, looking at it as a story goal that ends in failure, how we illustrate that is when you talk about becoming or changing one's nature, are we talking about the nature of marriage, of a lifestyle?
I think we're talking more, I think we're talking larger. I think it's a social issue. Mm-hmm. I think in this, the goal is a much more abstract thing. Well, that's probably more the concern. The goal would be, well, okay.
Either
way, it could either be that the people around them are trying to force these two characters into a particular mold. They're trying to change them.
All of the people.
Right.
Even the children.
You know, if you've got to fit into this mold, this is the way society is, and you've got to, if you're not that way, you need to become it. You need to change your nature so that you fit in. And it breaks. It doesn't work. And one of the people is one of them is physically killed. The other one is emotionally killed. You know, and he's yeah. alone, literally no longer part of society, even though he works and he has a family. He just has completely separated himself and unable to interact with the other people on any kind of reasonable fashion.
Interestingly, he tries to hold on to the daughter and really commit to her. My job.
Right.
Be there.
Right, exactly. And it's sort of issue, but partly responsibility, but also partly commitment. But you kind of feel like it feels... I'm doing it less as a commitment, but I'm because it's my responsibility as a parent that I should do it, you know, versus a commitment to his job. You know, you see him constantly, Ennis, constantly throwing that away. And even Jack. And other characters really putting a big emphasis on responsibility and with the kids. Here, they're your responsibility. I'm going to go off and have fun. Here, you take care of them. You know, like being very irresponsible. And then we have the benchmark of playing a role. So I think that over the course of the story, you've got, you know, people becoming less and less willing to play the roles that they're given. You know, Jax becomes less and less the dutiful son-in-law and husband, and, you know, Ennis, the dutiful husband, and the wives, they're less willing to just be the dutiful wife. You know, each one of them, they tend to stop playing the roles so much that they've been dealt, and I think that indicates that there's, you know, the conflict is rising.
See
you. Well, you know, I think more women attend to this picture than men.
Was that?
This is a woman's picture.
Well, I think men have a problem with. I heard that was a great way of analyzing. When men see something on screen, they put themselves into that character, and if that character is doing something they wouldn't do, then they're completely rejected by it. Whereas women don't have a problem with sort of stepping in and experiencing that type of thing. They don't really see themselves as necessarily the ones that are doing it. But this is, I mean, this, I can't remember exactly where I heard this, but
women, or let's say myself, I thought when I saw this film, my God, we are finally seeing men emotionalize, or you know, express emotion physically in their face, their body. My God, all those westerns I saw of yep and no. Tremendous emotional reaction and on myself. And I think, maybe I'm in error, but I think this is why a lot of women would have gone to this film, because it's a real switcheroo from a woman's point of view.
It's,
I don't know.
It's also playing against, it's playing against the stereotype of the cowboy, too.
Yes, and put that was the, in westerns, you know, the westerns, all the guy was real sentimental about was his horse. And, you know, went on for years, this thing.
Right, because again, it's sort of the, I mean, Ennis is sort of that, a realistic version of that
yes.
phony character where they're completely cut off from feelings and
yes.
do not know how to process the feelings. And when they come up, they can't even quench them, they just have to react to them. And they react to the symptoms and can't really deal with them directly. Yeah,
yeah.
So I think, and you know, it's a tragedy. It's not painting it in a very, you know, very positive light. But the attempt is, you know, the attempt by Jack and Ennis to make something happen is the thing that is very unusual, because that usually never gets even into that.
I have some question.
Yes.
Okay, so the difference between the benchmark and the signpost is like four signposts is like four possibility of the story going on, and the benchmark is some importance?
No. The way that the signposts are, in the domain you're exploring, there are four types. There are four acts. And the signposts are the area that you're exploring in each of those acts. So you're trying to find out where the problem is. So in order to find it, you've got to explore everywhere. And at the act level, you see that in the structure at the type level. The benchmark is a way to evaluate how the tension or how the through line is progressing. Is it getting more and more tense? Is it getting less and less tense? If is the relationship building? Is the relationship being torn apart? Are things getting more tense? Are they getting less tense? Because the benchmark gives you a sense of how things are changing over time. And it's just a way to clue into your audience, here's what's going on. For instance, you might have a father-son relationship, and the father always promises the son to go to a football game with him, or a baseball game. And so he buys tickets and says, okay, son, let's, you know, I bought the tickets, now I'll be here. And the father doesn't show up. And so the kid puts puts it on his cork board. And then a little later in the story, you see, that there are three of them, and then there's five of them, and then the kid starts throwing them in the trash. You understand, okay, this relationship's on the skids. The kid isn't worrying about keeping them anymore. So that sort of that benchmark of it shows the progress, or in that case, the lack of progress, the digression of the relationship. So you have a benchmark in all four through lines. So each through line will have a way to indicate to the audience, is this building up or is it being torn down? Because you can have conflict can do either way. You can either build things up or it can tear them apart.
And so the benchmark over here is doing.
So we have in the relationship through line, the main versus impact character story, the benchmark is doing. So what are they doing? Well, it starts off the very first relationship thing they're doing is they're just having sex. That's sort of like the first just them thing that goes on. By the end, they're hardly seeing each other. They're not spending much quality time. What they're doing is they're bickering You know, you don't even see them cuddling, or the last time you don't really even see them have sex or cuddling. They're just, you mean they're there, but they're not there. So you see that progress go over the course of the story, where it starts off as just sex, then it and immediately there's emotion, and then it starts getting the emotions get tighter and tighter, but it's more and more conflict growing between them. And you see that by what they're doing. You know, and I think that gives an audience an idea that this relationship is falling apart. It's a strong relationship, but the two partners are not growing apart, but the stresses in the relationship are forcing them apart. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. The catalyst in the relationship through line is self-interest. That means a catalyst is the thing that creates more conflict. So you see that when, for instance, the instance when Ennis says, well, I've got these things I got to take care of, when Jack comes up to go out with them, that creates a lot more conflict in the relationship. Whereas in the inhibitor in openness, when Jack reveals to Ennis that he's been to Mexico, that puts a real, that throws a cold water on their relationship big time. You know, so the elements of openness really slows things down. That's what the inhibitor is for. Ideally, what you use them, if you're writing, what you use the inhibitor and the catalyst, or the catalyst and inhibitor, are kind of like the accelerator and the brake pedal on your story. You want to go faster, you throw a little catalyst in. That makes more conflict, moves faster. If you want to slow things down, you put a little bit of the inhibitor in. It's important to use, because if you're exploring the relationship and you go, okay, I need to go back to my overall story, I need to see the big picture now, if you throw a little bit of the inhibitor in there, then you can kind of go away from that through line for a while, and people won't expect it to be developing while they're not looking. If you throw a catalyst right and then cut away, when you come back, things better have progressed, because the audience will have expected it to accelerate. So it's not only a way to use as a tool for story weaving, but it also explains how a through line doesn't go at a single pace. It actually does speed up and slow down, and that's one of the things that you can see is that the catalyst and inhibitor, when they pop in, they'll have that effect.
When you're looking at those two, do you always look at them the way they are? Because I know in some of the other terms, you can look at them in a negative way.
Sure. So you could say the lack of self-interest could create more conflict, or a lack of openness. But see, the difference is openness is not the same thing as lying. It's just, you know, you can have a degree of openness, too much openness, too little openness. Mm-hmm. You know, openness in a good way, openness in a negative way. That all of those sort of, the spin you can put on it, that's completely valid for any item in the story form. So you've got a lot of leeway in terms of flavoring what it is.
Does it matter how your story, if you're looking at your main impact story, if you have a story where you're basically trying to draw two characters together versus where in this story they're sort of going apart. They start together and then they sort of grow apart. Does it matter? Do you have to switch those two around, or is it always going to be the same?
No, the catalyst will all, the idea of a catalyst is always the thing that creates more conflict. Now, creating conflict can bring things faster together as well as faster apart. It's the direction in which the relationship is going that just speeds it up. You know, the benchmark measures it. Well, the catalyst just moves it faster toward the end, and the inhibitor slows it down. So it doesn't really matter, you know. And just like you can have something building up or tearing down. That's your choice. Any other questions with regard to the story form? It looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's an interesting movie. I like it.
Yeah, it's a beautifully told story. I wonder what if we make this uncontrolled? How does that change it? It's one thing I didn't look at. I wanted this. So if I make the choice uncontrolled, where feeling is the symptom, which I don't think is right, but I just thought I'd look at it. Impact character, problem of hinder. No. That doesn't work. Yeah, okay. I like to, when I think things sound like they're too...
Could be a good story, just not this one.
Right. But I like to, I always like to, if I think I've got the right one, then there was an alternative I thought of, I always like to go explore it, because sometimes you go, you know, that one's a lot better. This one didn't work that way. All right, so report.
And I had two story forms. I had one where I wasn't sure whether the objective story should be in fixed attitude and impulsive responses, or it should be in the manipulation and becoming. And I was leaning toward manipulation, so I was...
Well, again, I think the change steadfast thing is really important, and it's not... I know when I first saw it, I thought, oh, and this must be change because of that last thing. And then I watched it again, and it's like, he's doing that the whole time. He's doing exactly what he did at the beginning. He's basically being irresponsible at work and doing what he wants.
So it felt like the author was meaning to say that he had changed somewhat.
Well, he'd grown. And that's the difference between main character resolve and main character growth. He absolutely had grown. He wasn't responding exactly the same way, but unfortunately, fundamentally, he was. Mm. You know, it was almost just sort of he'd grown away from people, and whereas he was right in the middle of things beginning, and now he's just like he's so far away from people at the end. But he had not really changed. In essence, he hadn't changed except to cut himself off so they didn't have to interact with people and didn't have anybody sort of pushing on that sore point that he's got. This podcast was brought to you by Wright Brothers, creators of software for writers since 1982. Visit us at www.screenplay.com and www.dramatica.com.